Welcome to the Sinister Sisters podcast. I'm Felicia.
I'm Lauren.
We're best friends.
And we like spooky stuff.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to jump right into recommendations, I guess.
Let's do it.
My one for this week is a movie that I thought got bad reviews, and now I'm not really sure, but I actually started watching it on an airplane. And I was so into it, I actually came home and finished it. So that's, I feel like, how you know a movie is pretty good.
That's really saying something.
Yeah, but it only has a 27% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it was The Invitation that came out this year. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah, people didn't like that, I thought. I didn't see it.
I know. That's what I kept hearing, is people thought it – I don't know what they thought. But, yeah, but people didn't like it. It was directed by Jessica M. Thompson, written by Blair Butler. So,
dang, lady creators.
Yeah, and honestly, like, I really liked it. Like, it was, you know, it's a PG-13 horror film. And it's like, you know, I don't know if that's a spoiler. Should I just spoil the movie? Do people care?
Yeah, I mean, I don't care.
Just put us on mute for the next.
Fast forward.
Yeah, put us on mute for the next, like, 15 seconds. Okay, so it ends up being about vampires. And so it's like a fun little vampire movie, these like old wealthy vampires. I really liked it.
What did people have against
it? It was like a fun little movie. Like, was it high art? No. But who cares? Like, I thought it was fun. And it's like,
I love that main girl.
Yeah, she was so great. And it's one of those movies that, like, I feel like if I had seen when I was young, I would have been like, this is freaking awesome. Like, the aesthetic is really cool. Like, this like old castle they're in, like the middle of the English countryside.
It looks
like,
really it's beautiful, it's awesome. From the trailer. I remember thinking that too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really liked it, but other people didn't.
I might watch it then because it came up on one of my streaming. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I'll recommend it.
I love that. I've been watching. Have you seen any of Welcome to Chippendales?
No, but I heard it's great.
It's really good. And it's like so many of my favorite people. Juliette Lewis being absolutely crazy.
Oh my God, I think she's
the costume designer of like playing the costume designer of Chippendales. And then nice. Annalee Ashford's in it and she's great.
Oh, great. That's awesome.
And I love, well, Andrew Rannells is in it, but also Murray Bartlett. He's in the first season of White Lotus, but he's so good. He's a theater actor.
Oh, okay,
but he's playing like the choreographer that it's not really a spoiler if you know the story of Chippendales, but there's a murder that happens. And I think you see it early.
A murder?
There's a murder. So it's like a little true crime. It's a little.
Where is it? Is
like
it on Hulu?
Fun drama. Hulu.
Hulu, okay. Yeah.
But I didn't know anything about how Chippendale started or.
I don't know anything. Right. I didn't know there was a murder. Right. I don't know any of it.
I know. So highly recommend that. I've also been watching, there's a Playboy documentary on Hulu that.
I'm sensing a theme.
I'm obsessed with. Yeah, truly. Hulu said, Lauren, you would like this next. And I said, you're right.
You're right, Hulu. Okay, I have to watch that too then. That sounds amazing.
Because it's also really interesting. And then the other documentary that we just finished last night is called Don't Pick Up the Phone. Have you seen this?
Yeah. No. Is this a true crime about the stalker or something?
Yes. Yeah. It's this man who calls fast food restaurants like around a very large part of the country and gets managers to strip search employees.
Oh my God. Yes.
It's so gross and so weird. And like seemingly he doesn't have camera footage or anything. Like it's just the feeling, like it's just to make this happen, I guess.
Ew.
It's so gross and weird, but it's really interesting.
I saw something about that. Like I feel like, did somebody put that in a TE episode? Oh my God, they put it on a Law & Order SVU. That's what I'm thinking about. So they must have taken the story from that and then put it. But yeah, sorry. I just remembered because I was
like, do they do that a lot?
Storyline. Yeah, that's what Law & Order SVU basically does, is they take stuff from headlines and they make like their own version of it.
That's so interesting. Doesn't that feel like, I don't know.
Exploitative? I'm sure.
Yeah. I guess we're exploitative too, so.
Yeah, it's true. Here we are in this podcast. But yeah, that's very interesting and horrifying.
It's a weird story. Yeah, it's a weird whole thing, but very interesting. And I won't give any spoilers, but yeah, it's super interesting. Definitely recommend.
Nice. Am I going? It's me.
Yes, it's you.
Is I? Okay. So today I'm bringing you a love story, Lauren.
Aww.
And it is between these two people from Scotland. And this is, you know, this is actually a current news story. Yeah. So Derek McGivry and Angela McPherson. So basically, Derek is a therapist that specializes in like spiritual medium style, psychic style practices. So in particular, past life regression therapy sessions. And Angela McPherson, I think like 5 years ago, came to him for a session. She was divorced. She has two kids. And she was just feeling kind of lost in life. And she's kind of like spiritual too in certain ways. And she wanted to try past life regression and like see what she could find out about herself. Like she was just feeling like kind of like existential crisis-y and like wanted to just know more about who she once was, I guess. And so she goes over, he puts her into this trance, which is how these things start. And by the way, Derek McGivray, I'm sorry if I'm saying it wrong, actually has a YouTube channel that he updates currently, like right now.
And
one of the first videos on there is like a therapy session of a past life regression session that he performs with somebody.
That's and it's so like, interesting.
Yeah. So you can also go on there and watch it. But this one, it was not filmed. Okay. So she goes into a trance. She is led by Derek and travels back to like multiple past lives across the centuries that she's had. And when she gets to the one from the 15th century, she discovers she was a woman named Marie McLeod. And she lived in Dundee, which I don't know. I don't know where that is. I'm sorry. But she says she couldn't see her face, but she could feel that she was a woman. She had on a long dress and boots, and she was in some sort of marketplace. So she could smell food and herbs, and like she also felt like she was taller and like a little bit bigger than like her current body. And in Marie McLeod's life, she was being forced to marry somebody by her father who she didn't love. And there was somebody else that Marie was in love with. So Angela, she's, you know, got this very vivid memory of this, as she says, a strong built chap lifting a sack.
This is a sexual fantasy.
Yes, absolutely. This is like a romance novel.
Yeah.
And there was just this feeling that I liked him. And so the medium, Derek, he asked Angela who she wanted to marry instead. And her voice changed and she said, Charlie Anderson. And so Derek starts asking her, like, okay, what does Charlie look like? What is he like? Blah, blah, blah. Angela, she starts picturing her past self's true love, Charlie Anderson. She opens her eyes, sat bolt upright, pointed straight at Derek, her therapist. It says she has an epiphany that Derek was the man she was destined to wed.
Whoa.
So she sits up out of a trance at this very first therapy session with a man she's ever met, and she says, you're the man. I'm supposed to marry you.
And he says, okay.
she said, like, when she first, like, she had no attraction to him, like, when she first got there or, like, when she started the trance, whatever. But as soon as she was, like, in this past life regression, she just knew that he was the one. She said she got this overwhelming feeling of warmth in her heart, and she got teary-eyed. And she said it's just this feeling, this, like, knowing feeling that she had finally met him. So Derek, the therapist, says that when she did this, he just burst out laughing because he didn't know what to do. Because he was like, I'm confused by this reaction. This has never happened. But then, you know, okay, so they finished the session. So he's like, okay, that's ridiculous. That's wild that you feel this way. But you also have to pay me and leave.
Oh, no.
So apparently the session cost £65 in February of 2018. And then he was like, you know, like she was like very overwhelmed with her feelings towards him. And he was kind of like, I don't know, this feels very inappropriate.
I mean, good for him at least for knowing.
Yeah, he tried. So she messaged him after the session, just like saying thank you or whatever. And he eventually texted back after a pal encouraged him. And then 2 months later, they went on a date. And then Derek, so he had also divorced and had a couple or three children. And Angela, so once again, like Derek is this, you know, psychic medium therapist dude. And then Angela had also done some work as a well-being therapist. And so they had so much in common, and they both realized they were so like-minded. And Derek said, it's very rare you find someone so similar. And so then the couple married at the Elgin City Football Club, and you'll just love this. Okay.
Oh,
their
man.
Wedding theme is the time-traveling TV series Outlander.
No.
In which a combat nurse is thrown back 2 centuries to 1743. Very appropriate. Angela's dress, just get ready, was made by an Outlander costume designer. Their wedding cake was castle shaped, and their party and their party favors for their 85 guests were drums of whiskey. So wow. They really went all out, which I mean.
Did they have like some, I don't know, instrument playing?
I hope so. A fiddle? I don't know. Oh, what did they play then? I don't know.
I know. So I couldn't think of something fast enough. I was like, a lute?
A lute? A harp? I don't know. But yeah, so then they, you know, so they really, you know, believe in all this psychic medium stuff. So they got married and then they drove to their honeymoon, which was in Cornwall. And in a car that Angela had actually had a vision about a week before. So she said she had been doing these affirmations and visualizing, and she kept seeing herself in this cherry red car with heated seats. And so then when they got to like their destination in Cornwall, they went to go rent the car, and the guy sat her right down in a cherry red car with heated seats. And she was like, I knew it.
I knew it all along.
And then, yeah, so Angela also runs her own spiritual therapy business where she is like a reflexologist. So like foot reflexology. And I'm sorry, I keep laughing. This stuff is just great. But she says she uses her talents to see the soul inside the sole, S-O-L-E, of your foot.
Oh, man. No. She likes a pun.
She loves it. The couple also hosts tea leaf reading parties, which are actually adorable. So they have a short video on this on their YouTube channel too. But it's like English tea service style stuff, like the little cakes and the little things. But while they're there, they teach people how to read tea leaves. And they're just like adorable. I don't know. They seem
kind of love that.
Really happy. So yeah, they've been together for 5 years now, and like they truly both believe that they were like supposed to be together in a past life, and they finally found each other, and they're, you know, blissfully happy and have some lovely Outlander, you know, wedding photos.
Chemistry. Yeah, wedding photos. I love that. Yeah. That was a sweet story.
Isn't that cute? Yeah. Once again, it's like, I just love those websites. It's like NPR has one, Huffington Post has one. There's another one too, but they do just do like weird news stories.
Yeah.
Just like things that are just like a little odd. and that's this one. But he has a lot of stuff on his YouTube channel. So if you're into any of that, feel free. He also has a lovely Scottish accent, which is always like just nice. But yeah. That's it.
That's amazing.
That's Derek and Angela.
I like the concept of past lives sometimes.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I'm still yeah. I don't know. I like the idea. What was I doing? Yeah. What were we like?
I don't know.
Okay, so actually, I am covering a witch this week who is Scottish. So a little time.
We did it.
So I'm covering Isabel Gowdy, and she was a Scottish woman, and she confessed to witchcraft in 1662 in Aldern, which is a village in Scotland. And why I wanted to cover her and like what kind of sets her apart. She has these incredibly detailed confessions of like what she did and what the witchcraft was that I just feel like is super interesting. So just to set the scene a little bit, starting in about 1550 in Scotland, there were many, you know, I guess like years of witch hunts. So I didn't even really know that they qualify them like in this way historically, but there was the Great Scottish Witch Hunt of 1590 to 91, the Great Scottish Witch Hunt of 1597. There was 1628 to 1631, 1649 to 1650, and 1661 to 1662.
Yeah, I think I mentioned one of these in an old episode, like one of these witch hunts, but I can't remember which one. And I'll never remember because I don't remember a single thing I've ever done on this podcast. But yes, keep going.
We're like traditionally those students, like I feel like it's such a school thing where we like learn the information really well and then it's gone.
And it's gone. Oh yeah.
Tomorrow, nothing. Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
But I do think it's interesting that there was obviously so many years of this. When Mary Queen of Scots was in power, there was the Scottish Witchcraft Act that was passed in 1563. This allowed people to be put to death if they were found to be guilty of witchcraft. So lots of accusing going on, similar to kind of other times of witch hunting. You know, historians have all these different opinions on why it, you know, occurred in kind of batches like this. It seems like this time around is like, you know, kind of political or economic uncertainty, different groups fighting for power and land, all those kinds of things that, you know, lead people to sort of want to have control or hurt other people or get land or any of those things. So specifically where Isabel Gowdy lived, there were, you know, these bad weather conditions that caused poor harvests from 1649 to 1653. King Charles I was executed in 1649, started extensive witch hunts. Then Charles II was declared the monarch in 1660. He was one of those rulers that was like exiled, came back. You can definitely do research into all of this, you know, more historical stuff. I'm not going to get super into it, but coming back to Isabel, she was probably one of seven witches tried in her village during this witch hunt, and she was likely brought up in that area. There's not very much information that's known about her before she got married to John Gilbert. There's really not even information on how old she is, or not is, how old she was, or at the time she was accused of witchcraft. So in 1662, at her trial, she could have been anywhere from 15 years old or well into her 30s or 50s.
Nobody remembered if she was a teenager or an old woman.
Nobody knows. So her husband was a farm laborer. And the deal at that time was like, it's kind of that indentured servant thing where if you get this piece of land and cottage, that's like what you get in return for your work. There are no records of her having any children. We know that she wasn't able to read or write, which was, you know, normal at the time, especially for women. But her daily life was mostly just spent doing household chores. So getting to the interesting part. She made four confessions over a period of 6 weeks. So the first is dated April 13th, 1662. It's kind of unclear like why she came forward. there are different historians who, you know, say that maybe it was like she was involved in this conspiracy to kind of torment the local minister, is a thought.
What?
He was like a man who really feared witchcraft, and he was a witness at all of her interrogations. So like maybe somebody like put her up to it to like tease him, kind of thing. Also, you know, probably there was like weeks of accusations kind of circling her, and then, you know, she might have just come forward and started to confess. But once she started confessing, she would have been
confessing.
Once she started confessing, she would have been kept in solitary confinement, probably tortured. So just keeping all those things in mind.
Not a great thing to just tease someone about, probably.
No. And I don't really know that I believe that, or if it's like, I don't know if somebody said, I'm going to kill you if you don't do this. I don't know. You know,
who knows
how bad it was. But getting to her very detailed confessions. So these were all transcribed, written down based on what she was saying. So her first confession described a meeting with the devil that she had arranged in the village church. She named – this is also, I think, part of it too. Like, she named several other people who were there. She said she renounced her baptism and that the devil put his mark on her shoulder and then sucked blood from it.
Whoa.
Gross. She discussed several other encounters that took place at other locations between her and the devil. She even mentioned having sexual intercourse with the devil, saying he was a very cold, great, like big, dark, rough man. He had forked feet that were sometimes covered with shoes. And she also described taking a child's body from a grave with a devil and spoiling the crops with this dead body. And it's really intense. She included information about covens and where they would dance together. She explained that she would put a broom beside her husband in his bed when she left. I mean, I just think this is like kids putting like a basketball under their comforter.
I swear I'm here.
Yeah.
So she said the coven ate and drank the best food at houses that they reached from flying through the air on magical horses and going into these homes through these people's windows and then eating their food. She said that they were entertained by the queen of the fairies in her home, which was filled with water bowls that frightened her. And water bowls, I looked into this, is like kind of like, you know, Loch Ness Monster, water horses, sort of that realm. They also thought there were water bulls, like kind of like water cows, I guess.
Oh.
Water bowl? B-U-L-L-S.
Oh, I thought you meant bowls of water.
I'm sorry.
And I was like, she's bowls. Scared of bowls of water?
She's terrified.
Okay, that makes more sense. I mean, it doesn't make more sense, but it makes the same sense.
Some sense. She also confessed to making these clay figures of – so this man in power was called Laird of Park. I don't really know. It's L-A-I-R-D. I'm assuming it's kind of like Lord, but it was a person in charge. So she would make clay figures of his male children. And this guy in power owned the land where she lived. So she made these clay figures and like would – it seems kind of like voodoo doll territory. You know, this was to cause them suffering or death. And she also confessed to assuming the form of a bird and that other members of the coven had transformed into cats or rabbits or other animals and visited people's houses as these animals. I should say there's like – also in the confessions, there's like a lot of et cetera moments where they literally write et cetera. And, you know, that's whether it was like deemed irrelevant to write down or if possibly like the scribes couldn't keep up with how fast she was speaking, which I also kind of like to imagine.
Yeah.
But about 2 weeks after that, Isabel made her second confession. So she went into more details about the coven, nicknames of the members, and talks about like the spirits that waited on them. She had a servant spirit herself named Reed Reaver. He dressed in black. She also included, this is kind of unbelievable, she included 27 individual chants that they would use to transform into cats, horses, various animals. Wow. A total 27, and that was more than in any other British witchcraft case, which I also think is cool.
Yeah.
So she also testified that the devil made these like elf arrows that were then enhanced by his, like, he had these like little servant elf boys that would make the arrows even more whatever, amazing. And each coven member would receive a certain number of arrows that were given to them by the devil with instructions that they were to be fired in his name. Wow. But they didn't use bows to shoot these arrows. They just flicked them with their thumbs. So they must be relatively small. Mm. But the witches would not always hit the target. But if they did, the man, woman, or animal would die, even if they were wearing armor. She also confessed to several spells that were used to torment Harry Forbes, that minister that I mentioned. So 12 days later, she made her third confession. And this one began with her detailing her original pact with the devil again. She goes on to reveal the names of the people that she killed with the arrows, claiming that she felt, you know, remorseful for those deaths. She also named other coven members' victims that they killed with arrows. She gave an account of the devil sending her on an errand disguised as a hare. She was chased by a pack of dogs and escaped them by running from house to house until she could transform back into a human. And when she transformed back into a human, those bite marks and scars from the dogs attacking the hare were still on her body.
Mm.
But apparently the dogs couldn't kill her when she was in rabbit form.
I just can't believe how much detail.
Can you believe this?
Like, that's kind of what's blowing my mind. I'm like, she had a lot to say. Like, because I feel like sometimes this stuff is like, okay, like they tortured out enough of them so they could execute them. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just shocked that she was like, here's all the stuff I did.
I just want to know more about, like, why. But, I mean, I'll talk about that a little bit. But, like, it's wild to me.
Yeah.
I'm almost done, I swear, with the details. But
she it's fascinating. Keep going.
It's so specific. She talked about eating with the devil, him beating coven members and their responses to being beaten. There's some more, like, scandalous details of her sex with the devil and, like, characteristics of his genitals. And she also shared another verse that the devil had taught them to chant while they were making those clay figures that they would torture people with. And then finally, 12 days later after that, she gave the fourth and final confession. So this was basically kind of confirming the other three and giving more information about the other members of the coven. And 41 people were arrested as a result of what she had confessed.
She said, if I'm going down, you're all going with me.
I know. It's really insane. So the saddest part is that there's no record of her being executed, but it's not really abnormal. A lot of those local records, you know, just don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
But a British historian named Emma Wilby hypothesized that she likely would have been found guilty at a local trial, and she would have been strangled and burned was how they dealt with witches at the time.
Dang.
Bad. Or there's a very small possibility that perhaps she was acquitted on the basis of mental impairment.
Insanity?
Yep.
They said, you've said too much, and now we don't believe you.
It's not a bad tactic.
You're accused of witchcraft. You go so hard that they say, we don't believe you. Never mind.
Never mind. You're just crazy. You're not a witch. It's very interesting to me. And the kind of most fascinating to me is, like, her confessions are really different from the other folklore and records from the witch trials. Like, there's a lot of theories, I think, but that people have to, like, why she would confess. People talk about, like, there's, like, this fungus that existed in the area that maybe like caused her to be poisoned. And it also like it causes hallucinations or other mental instability. As we kind of mentioned, you know, torture was often used in trying to make witches confessed, and she was spending a lot of time in solitary confinement. So maybe that's part of it. Mm-hmm. They like historians go into like, you know, she's talking about these like eating these meals with the devil, and maybe she was just incredibly hungry. Or she talks about, you know, when she's talking about all this sex stuff, I thought this was really interesting that there was a lot of soldiers traveling through the area at the time and raping women.
Wow.
So there are people that think that that was maybe just like a trauma response to being raped.
Oh my gosh.
Which I think is interesting. But all in all, I just thought it was like, as I said, so detailed, so fascinating, very specific. I just feel like I don't really know why she wanted to go into this much detail, but kind of amazing. She had a stage and she took it.
She said, "I'm a star." Sorry, Pearl reference.
I love it. I think, I don't know. I'm like, she's either totally crazy or like, again, it's like maybe somebody made a promise to her that if she said who else was there and like
they let her go or something.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's just, it's always so interesting to me. And there's still a part of me that's just like, I do, you know, think there has to be like something at the core of all of this witchcraft, whether it was just like women getting together and venting. I don't know.
Who knows? Who knows?
But we definitely are descendants of these women.
Oh, for sure.
Four confessions of monologues about their time with the devil.
Give me a stage, baby. I won't stop talking.
She just needed a podcast.
That's right, Lauren. She just needed a podcast. Yeah.
But that's the story of
that was wild.
Isabel Gowdy, the longest witchcraft confession ever.
I love that. I love that. Good job. That was some good stuff in there.
Amazing. Well, thank you all for listening.
We hope you have some sweet, sweet nightmares.
Bye.